I've had big moments, the kind that shift everything, but most of my life, it wasn't built in the spotlight. It was shaped in the shadows, in the quiet flickers most people miss. And it's those tiny ones I remember. Moments so small, they almost disappeared. The ones I didn't think mattered until they did. That's what built me. Not the fireworks, but the flickers. We wait for the big break, the bold move, the dramatic shift, but it's never been that for me. The life I'm living now, the one I'm proud of, the one I paid for in silence and softness, it wasn't built in a single day. It was built in the background. So pour a cup, let's go slow. Because I want to tell you about the small stuff, the quiet stuff, the stuff that shaped me when no one was watching. I've had more of these than I can possibly name. The quiet moments that shaped the man I became. I'm just sharing a few, the ones that stayed with me long after they passed. This is I Drink My Coffee Black and My Whiskey Neat, where we don't shout, we pour. And this morning, I am remembering the moments that never asked to be remembered, but stayed anyway. This began with a moment I almost forgot, a small rebellion that showed me who I could become. When I was in high school, I cheated my way to an A. Not because I didn't understand, but because I was bored. My mind needed a challenge, and the classroom wasn't it. Sitting in my final semester of the 12th grade, listening to lessons recycled for the fifth time, watching teachers try to spark interest in rooms long gone dim, none of that moved me. But outsmarting the system, now that was interesting. Figuring out how the school worked, on my own terms, learning its weaknesses, and finding a way through the cracks, that was exciting. So I watched, and I learned. And eventually, I acted. Logged into a dusty terminal in the back of the school library, found the grades, the access points, the buttons, and just like that, a few quiet keystrokes later, I had straight A's, perfect attendance. It wasn't some Ocean's 11 operation. This was the 80s. Nothing was encrypted. Everything was fair game, if you knew where to look. I didn't do it to hurt anyone. I did it because I could, because it felt like power. And then one day, right near the end of the year, a teacher pulled me aside. She didn't yell, didn't ask why, didn't even look surprised. She just looked at me in the eye and said, "Ronnie, you're either going to be the best criminal in the world or you're going to save it." That sentence hit me harder than any punishment would have. It wasn't angry, it was clear, and it shattered something. I didn't have words, because no one had ever said I had a choice. No one had ever told me that this brain, this fire, could be used to build something, not just bend it. That sentence became a mirror, and I never looked at myself the same way again. That's the thing about the truth. When it lands, it echoes. Not long after graduation, I joined the military. I decided I was going to try to save it. And people think that was my defining moment. But it wasn't. The real moment was a sentence, said softly by someone who saw through me and still believed in what was under the surface. Another one, it came dressed like a test and became a doorway I didn't see coming. There are things I've done in my adult life that I'll never speak about. Confidential, classified, need to know. And you don't need to know. But I'll tell you this. Years after joining the Army, I stood in front of a military board. Not just any board, one of those boards. The kind that can launch your career or leave you behind. Every board I ever faced before was predictable. Two or three questions per panel member, checklist stuff. But this one was different. One table, one question, one shot. In front of me sat a model airplane. Commercial, civilian. Nothing tactical about it. At least not on the surface. And then came the question, what do you see? And I wasn't expecting that. I wanted a question that I could answer with facts, specs, etc. Not this. But it was the question, so I had to answer. I almost said what they wanted to hear. Wingspan, fuel range, flight ceiling, recon capability, mission readiness. But I paused, because that's not what I saw. I saw people. Sleeping passengers with books open on their laps, a flight attendant pouring ginger ale, a nervous flyer gripping the armrest too tight, a toddler crying in the third row, two pilots talking to ground control, one of them thinking about what he'll say when he gets home. That's what I saw. So I told them. I spoke from the picture in my mind, not the manual in my head. And the moment the words left my mouth, I knew it could cost me everything. Because the military loves accuracy, but it doesn't always know what to do with vision. Still, I told the truth. Because sometimes your truth is your only offering. I was dismissed from the board. No applause, no handshake, just thank you and you're dismissed. Days later, I got a message from the platoon leader. Report to one of the board members. I walked in expecting rejection. Instead, he said, "You weren't selected by the board, but you were seen. You see beyond what's in front of you, and we need that. Not there, but here." And just like that, I was placed in a new unit. One I didn't even know existed. One that fit me better than the one I thought I wanted. Here, I didn't have to suppress what came naturally. I got to use it. That answer, that moment, only took 10 seconds. But the ripple it created never stopped. One honest response, that's it. And it led me somewhere I never would have found by playing it safe. Then there's the moment when speaking up meant risking it all, and doing it anyway. Quiet on the outside, heavy on the inside. We were preparing for a mission. Everything looked good on paper, but something in me knew. We weren't ready. Most of my soldiers were new to the unit. Fresh boots, fresh nerves, still learning how to move together. We were in that clumsy phase, where instincts haven't aligned yet, and every step feels a half beat off. We hadn't trained enough to work as one, not yet, and the mission didn't care. In the military, you don't say that out loud, not in front of your colonel, not when everyone's expecting confidence and compliance, but I said it anyways. We're not ready. And the room got quiet. Real quiet. You could feel that air tighten. You could see the doubt circling, like I had just tossed my reputation out the window and watched it fall 6 floors down. To some, it looked like insubordination. To others, career suicide. But I wasn't being reckless. I was being responsible. I wasn't protecting myself. I was protecting them. They gave us more time, more training, not because they believed in me, but because now they were watching. So we trained harder than we ever had, longer, smarter, sharper. Because if I was going to speak that kind of truth, I had to back it up with something undeniable. And when the mission came, we executed flawlessly. No stumbles, no second guesses, just cohesion, just precision. And those same soldiers, the ones they doubted, they became leaders themselves. Because I didn't pretend we were something we weren't, I gave them room to grow instead of forcing them to pretend. Readiness isn't about optics, it's about honesty. And one moment of honesty, spoken in a room where silence was safer, saved more than just my ego. It saved the mission, and it changed who they became. Here's another. Some departures don't echo loudly, but they still change everything. I left the military before I hit 20 years. Could have stayed. Most people do. That's the finish line, the pension, the salute. But I didn't. Not because I couldn't hack it. I was thriving on the outside, respected, relied on, called in when the chaos hit the hardest. But inside, I was tired. Tired in a way that doesn't show up in labs or morning formations. Tired in a way that doesn't earn sympathy, just silence. For years, I had pushed hard, harder than anyone around me knew, trying to be the best. Trying to stay 10 steps ahead of the mental pain, which I didn't even have a language for yet. Episode 2 touches on it, but there's more beneath that silence. All I knew was this. My instinct started whispering, "This isn't yours anymore," and I listened. I watched the briefings get shorter, the certainty begin to fray, the trust in leadership thin out, and I asked myself a question I'd spent years avoiding. Who will you be when you stop being a soldier? So I walked. No ceremony, no folded flag, just an exit. I left the thing that both hurt me and shaped me. And that kind of leaving always costs something. The hardest part? No longer being the one who people looked to when the storm rolled in. No longer being the name they called when the plan went sideways. I had to become someone else, or maybe finally become myself. And here's what I didn't expect. Leaving gave me room to breathe, to think, to feel, to heal, to walk into boardrooms and through back entrances. To guard lives across oceans and find a place in the civilian world without losing the edge that made me. I wasn't done. I just didn't belong there anymore. And the most radical thing I did, I made the decision quietly. Didn't ask for advice. Didn't ask for validation. Didn't follow the crowd. Didn't wait for permission. I just listened to the voice inside of me that doesn't have words and obeyed it. Then came the shift. The one that wasn't loud, just necessary. Later in life, I walked away from a high-paying job. One of those jobs people envy. The kind that gets nods at dinner tables, respect in rooms you don't belong to yet. And it paid well. Came with perks. Came with power. But it also came with a silence that didn't feel like peace. I was good at it. Really good. But good doesn't mean aligned. There's a difference between rising up and being raised up by what you do. And one morning, after another night of not sleeping, I realized I was carrying something heavy I wasn't meant to hold, so I left. No meltdown, no breakdown, just a quiet no more that I whispered to myself until I believed it. It didn't feel like a leap. It felt like a release, like setting down a bag that never had anything to do with me. And then I built something of my own, something rooted in purpose, in presence, in truth. And every part of my life that matters now started the moment I walked away from what didn't. And finally, the moment I stopped chasing storms and started choosing shelter. Until I was about 42, I kept choosing chaos and love. I thought I was attracted to passion, but what I really craved was adrenaline, the alertness, the overdrive, the feeling of being alive because something was always on fire. It made sex feel urgent, arguments feel intimate, silence feel dangerous. And deep down, I believed that if I stayed present enough, strong enough, intense enough, I could fix it. But not one of those relationships worked. Not one. And eventually, I had to admit something hard. I hadn't saved anyone. If anything, I may have made things worse by showing up in survival mode and calling it love. Then I met a life coach, and she gave me one quiet challenge. Try dating someone who doesn't need to be saved. That sounded simple, but it wrecked me, because I had built an entire identity on being the protector, the rescuer, the one who stays through the storm. I didn't know how to be in a relationship without that role, but I tried, and the trying changed me. I stopped chasing dysfunction and started noticing calm, soft voices, safe hands, spaces where love didn't feel like a battlefield. Now I'm with someone I don't have to protect. We just walk together. No rescue missions, no fire drills, just presence. And that's more powerful than any intensity I ever mistook as intimacy. But to get there, I had to make one final choice. I walked away from relationships I couldn't fix. Not with anger, with clarity. Because some people cannot be saved. You can love them. You can pray for them. But you can't lose yourself in the process. Sometimes real love means letting go. Not to abandon them, but to return to yourself. Because attraction isn't always alignment. And chaos isn't love. It's just noise. I used to say, I'd follow you to hell if I had to. Thought that was romantic. Thought that was devotion. But now, love doesn't follow anyone to hell. It leads. It leads to calm, to peace, to safety, to something that doesn't burn to feel alive. That's what I offer now. Not fire, but shelter. So what do all these quiet choices add up to? We ignore the small stuff because it doesn't sparkle. It doesn't go viral. It doesn't come with an applause. But the drip wears down the stone. The whisper shapes the path. The quiet choice still echoes. You don't need a lightning bolt. You need stillness. A breath before the next step. That's where transformation lives. So if you've been waiting for a sign, maybe this is it. Not because it's loud, but because it's quiet. And so are most of the moments that made you. You didn't get here by accident. You got here one tiny decision at a time. So make the next one count. Even if no one sees it. Even if it's just you, sitting alone, choosing honesty over performance. That's not small. That's sacred. This is I Drink My Coffee Black and My Whiskey Neat. Coffee's still warm, and that's my tiny thought for today. Until next week, may each tiny sip of life transform you and lead you to greatness.